Patricia, your article that was published in Inside Sources, you talked about the Biden administration and how they are restricting domestic oil and gas leases. Want to fill our listeners in here on just how severe those restrictions are.
They are very severe. They canceled a host of leases in Alaska after many years of negotiations with the Alaska government and with tribes where the leases were in the Alaska Anwar, which is a region. So they basically kneecapped economic development for most of the state of Alaska. And now in Wyoming and in other states where the federal government owns a lot of land, especially in the western states, they own, in some states, over half of the state the federal government owns. They are doing what they can to depress leases and to functionally bully or buy out companies from producing oil and natural gas.
Walk us through, if you will, the process by which these leases are normally awarded. Does the federal government advertise them? Is there bidding by the oil and gas companies? How does that process work?
So there is a process, like I outlined in law. So companies typically nominate parcels of land for lease. It didn't used to cost some money. Now I think it's like maybe like a couple of dollars an acre to nominate, maybe $5 an acre to nominate them. The Department of Interior considers them for leasing, and then they may go up, and then companies can decide to bid. And companies often hold a lot of leases because you need time to speculate, to investigate, and then you want to like hold some other leases in case where your drilling doesn't really pan out. You know, it's a rather complex process, and the government has a lot of land that's productive. They know it's productive. They've known it's productive since they bought it, in that there's a lot of oil and gas to be taken out of it. And it is a rather laborious task to get that resource out. So that's why they have this competitive bidding process, which makes the government money. And it also makes the state money because these things are taxed at the federal and state level. So a company will nominate a parcel of land, let's take the state of Wyoming, for example, then the federal government will consider putting that piece of land up for auction. And in a very sneaky move, the government has, at least in the state of Wyoming, has been offering up donut-sized land regions for sale, which means there's a significant portion of the land that they're offering for lease, that they've approved for lease, and they will not allow the middle section to be leased. So they offer up a donut, which you cannot really produce on, because just like anything, you need to be able to go through the middle, you need to be able to travel through. If you're fracking or doing anything horizontally underneath the ground, you need more space to operate. So that, I say, is a very sneaky way that they're also depressing oil and gas production. And I think because it has been successful in Wyoming, we know it's been successful because the industry representatives have testified before Congress that the companies they represent are experiencing this and are not able to produce as efficiently as they would like to, that they will continue to do that and will do that more because it's working.
It would seem to me here, Patricia, that this country has enormous amounts of oil and gas reserves, and being able to tap into those reserves, market forces being what they are, isn't a more plentiful supply something that will result in lower cost to consumers?
Exactly. I mean, there's really, I can't understand why oil and gas prices are what they are, considering the abundance of oil and how happy other countries are to trade with us. So the abundance of domestic oil and then oil internationally. The United States has so many resources. We are really blessed with rich resources, and yet we are making it more and more difficult every year to access these resources, right? The Inflation Reduction Act was another huge, huge move against oil and gas companies from producing, which every administration has their own agenda, their own goals, right? The Carter administration was similarly like not super happy with oil production. They took like intentional moves against that. The Biden administration is also very against more oil and gas production. So they're doing what they can. And he was elected, so he's doing what he can using his executive power to discourage oil and gas production. But there's no replacement right now. We don't have alternative resources, especially because we are not allowing nuclear companies to operate and we don't have the capacity to produce with wind and solar in any way to replace this energy resource. So the solution is, I guess, we will buy from other countries. I guess we will continue to increase trade with Venezuela, and New England will continue to buy natural gas from Russia and ship it in. I guess that's the solution, but that seems quite insane to me, considering how rich we are in resources.
Not only that, but when you talk about Venezuela and you talk about Russia, obviously the United States slapping all sorts of sanctions on Russia because of its invasion of Ukraine. What does that do, Patricia, to the reliability of the oil and natural gas supply if we're depending on places like Venezuela and Russia?
It makes the grid less reliable if we are not making sure that we have secure access to resources. If we don't allow grid operators, so obviously like the electrical grid is regional, and that is how we all get power to our homes. If we are not prioritizing reliable energy to our homes and also reliable resources and to produce that energy, like, we are setting ourselves up for blackouts, and we're also setting ourselves up for significant pockets of unemployment in areas where there is a lot of oil and natural gas production. In Michigan, there's a lot of small oil well producers. There's also a lot in Wyoming and scattered throughout America. I mean, same in even Pennsylvania, which has like a rather small percentage of oil and natural gas production. There's still quite a few small companies and people that receive money from this type of small production. If we get rid of all of that wealth and all of those job opportunities that really support these communities, we're also creating a really significant opportunity for social decay and community poverty if all of these businesses are suddenly no longer allowed to operate or find it too expensive to continue to producing how they were.
While we are increasing our dependability on undependable sources of foreign oil and gas here, what is the status of the Strategic Oil Reserve? We saw the Biden administration had released huge amounts of that supply in an effort to fight Bidenflation. So have they replenished that supply, or are we maybe at a critical level when it comes to our internal strategic reserves?
So the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is important in that if there is like a case of crisis, the president can use it to release the oil to maintain prices and really help the American people. So he's drained it more than any other president, I think, by at least 4 or 5 times over. I think this summer we were like negative 300,000 barrels. By comparison, Donald Trump, after 32 months in office, had drained 50,000 barrels. And George Bush, when he was president, actually added 75,000 barrels. So the goal for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve should be to add to it in case of a time of significant crisis. And especially when we are choosing to engage in a lot of conflict around the world, I don't understand why we would be releasing barrels of oil at the same time that we are restricting domestic production and discouraging domestic production. That doesn't make sense to me. And also increasing trade with countries that we don't officially like very much. Like, we have active sanctions on Venezuela. We relaxed a couple to increase oil trade with them. But all of this doesn't seem to make sense to me. And I would really love for someone to be making reliable, like, decisions that prioritize reliability and the safety of Americans and the stability of oil prices.
We have been talking with Patricia Patnode, who is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Patricia, tell us a bit about CEI. Also, where can your writings be found on your website?
I can be found, my profile on CEI.org. That's my organization's website. I'm also on Twitter at Ideal Patricia. So CEI stands for, obviously, Competitive Enterprise Institute. We were founded in 1984, basically to combat the narrative of the book 1984. We're a leading advocate of regulatory reform. We handle a lot of different policy issues. Basically, we want less regulation, more freedom, more fairness, and really to protect the flourishing and opportunities of America, and so that American families can have jobs and have security.
Patricia Patnode of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Patricia, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much.